How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 211 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Greg Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, and leave a review once you're on that page. You can also find us on audioboom.com. You can log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog. It's right there, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. You can see all my Thunder coverage there and draft coverage there. And the draft is coming up on Thursday. So this week, I've been doing Tuesday, Thursdays the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever it is. Today, this week, we're going back to a new schedule. I'm not going back to that 5 days a week because it's still tough to do 5 days a week. But I'm going to Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So here's our first Monday episode in a little while. Joining me to discuss draft, going to be talking draft today, going to be talking draft on Wednesday's podcast also, is draft guru, in my opinion, as good as there is, Sam Vicini. Sam, how you doing?
I'm all right, Fred. You know, it's a nice day out here in Los Angeles. It is, the day after the Markelle Fultz trade, which, you know, just leads me to being, you know, tired and sleep deprived and everything, because I was up until, 5 a.m. Eastern time, 2 o'clock Pacific time out here writing about it. So it's one of those days, but I am happy to be here with you.
Where's that trade in your, like, craziest week of the draft, week leading up to the draft trades in recent years ever? Where is that for you? Because that's a crazy deal.
Well, so, like, I just figured that this wasn't going to get done until Monday, right? Like, I was like, all right, this will probably get announced. The details will come out on Monday. So I, like, had decided to, you know, just go to the bar, have a couple drinks with my girlfriend, and, you know, have a nice night with her, right? And my other friend who I lived with for a couple of years was going to come meet us. Then it happens, and I'm just, like, on my phone the whole time. I'm trying to figure it out, and it just comes to the point where I'm just like, honestly, I'm sorry, we just have to go home. And had to start writing like crazy. I think I wrote like 5,000 words last night. It was pretty miserable, but nonetheless, it's a crazy trade. It's a total shakeup. I said on Twitter last night that the shakeup of this is essentially 19 of the top 37 picks in my mock draft changed. So this totally changes the course of the entire NBA draft, right? It's not just Philadelphia and Boston, becoming, these interesting storyline narrative-based rivals over the course of the next few years. It's the way that everything filters down to the rest of the teams throughout the NBA. It's a genuinely league-shaking move. And, you know, in terms of the draft, I can't really remember a move like that.
So who do you have the Thunder picking in your most updated version of your mock right now?
I have them taking, Derek White out of Colorado. I think that they're at number 21. That might be, like, you know, for a lot of people publicly, a little bit of a reach. You talk to people around the NBA, though, and, you know, people wonder just how high he can rise come draft day, because, you know, all of these guys here in this range, right? Like, there are so many different types of big man. There's Jared Allen, the fluid, mobile, great hands big man with a 6'11 height and 7'6" wingspan. There's Justin Patton, who, you know, has some maturity questions and also has, like, a crazy amount of skill because he can shoot, he can finish above the rim and do all kind of stuff. EK Onabogu's kind of like the defensive stopper. And you can go down and down the list. Harry Giles, TJ Leaf, Bam Adebayo. Continue to move down and down and down. And you can, you know, sell yourself on any of these big men. But with Derek White, His game more fits the modern NBA than any of those guys. He's a 6'5" guard that can play both the point guard and shooting guard position pretty capably. I like that fit a lot, particularly in Oklahoma City, where, as I'm sure your listeners realize, I mean, the Thunder probably had the worst backup point guard situation in the NBA. Obviously, having Russell Westbrook makes up for that in a big way. But, you know, I think getting a guy who can not only fill that backup point guard need, but also play with Russell Westbrook because he's a 40% three-point shooter that can also attack closeouts is really, really valuable to me.
Right. Well, that's the interesting thing about White to me, too, is, I mean, there are two interesting things about White. The interesting thing from the Thunder perspective is that the Thunder have kind of been looking for a backup point guard who can play with Russell Westbrook. Like, usually when a team has a star at a position, they don't really use their first round picks on those positions. But the Thunder haven't subscribed to that at all, right? Like, they took Reggie Jackson, but Reggie Jackson was a guy they figured, okay, he's going to be able to play next to Russell Westbrook because he has that obscene 7-foot wingspan, even though he's 6'3", and they figured he'll be able to guard two positions and he can play off the ball. And that was kind of their long-term experiment. And then Reggie Jackson ended up being, he kind of forced his way out and wanted his own team. But people, I think, in Oklahoma City kind of forget he was really good off the bench for them. And they kind of had the same plan for Cameron Payne. It didn't work as well with Cameron Payne, but they were hoping that was their hope. That was their strategy. You know, they thought Cameron Payne might be able to play next to Russell Westbrook and he couldn't guard twos and he didn't play off the ball well with him offensively either. But that was the plan. Like in summer league, they were intentionally playing 2 point guard lineups so that Cameron Payne could learn how to play next to a point guard. Except the only difference was that point guard was Samaje Christen instead of Russell Westbrook. And there's a slight difference in talent and style between those two guys. So,
also Cameron Payne was like 6'1", 170 pounds.
Right.
Like, you know, it's really difficult to make that work in the way that Oklahoma City wants it to work defensively. Whenever you have that little positional size in the backcourt, right? Like, it's just really difficult because for as athletic as Russell Westbrook is, he's not necessarily going to be a defensive stopper just because of all of the energy that he expends offensively.
Right. And so that's what's intriguing to me about White. Like, he could be a nice combo guard, I feel like. And the Thunder need help at backup point guard, like, today. There's no question about that. And White's, you know, an older guy who I guess his build is NBA ready. You can speak better to that than I can. But, okay, here's my interesting Derek White thing, which is just about Derek White and not about the Thunder. How disconcerting is it that he's had 1 year of competition against like real competition, because he was a D2 player for those who don't know. And then he went to Colorado and he played 1 year and he was great for Colorado this year. I mean, I've said in this podcast, I don't really watch college basketball. So what I've been doing the last 3 weeks is I've just been studying up on film on all of these guys like crazy. So I don't watch this necessarily chronologically. I sit down and I watch these guys and I watch how they do in the pick and roll. And then I watch how they do coming off screens and I watch how they do on spot ups. And so my opinion of this is more is not as narrative based or as chronologically based as your average person. And I don't pretend to be an expert on this, but for me watching him, he looks like he belongs completely. And obviously that's true to a degree because he's going to be a first or early second round draft pick.
Right.
But how disconcerting is it? I mean, is it any different from a freshman who comes in and has 1 year against top competition and then leaves? Is that the fact that he's 22 years old and he's only had that 1 year? Is that a problem? How much of a problem is that?
Well, it's certainly different just given what we know about developmental curves in the NBA, right? Having a 19-year-old that is equally as good as a 23-year-old, you obviously want the 19-year-old, right? Like that just kind of goes without saying. Having said that, I'm not as concerned with Derek White if you kind of know the story of like how his arc kind of went about, right? So he was like a 6-foot-tall kid coming out of high school that realistically went under-recruited. Like he was one of the best kids in Colorado at his height, but just ultimately didn't get the kind of D1 scholarship that he was looking for and went to the Division II level and dominated basically from day one. And then he shot up to 6'5". Midway through that time in Division II, and obviously moved up to Colorado and then dominated a Pac-12 level that I thought was pretty strong last year in terms of high-end athletic talent. So, you know, with a lot of guys who show improvement off of 1 year, like you're basing your decisions off of a 1 year of sample from a junior or something like that, right? Like from an older player. I'm trying to think of the example in this year's draft of like a late riser, like a like I have a little bit of hesitation with DJ Wilson. I have a little bit of hesitation with Jonathan Motley, like guys who just became bigger and stronger and more athletic than who they were playing against realistically. With Derek White, there is just a late bloomer growth arc that makes you think he was always this good and that he wasn't necessarily taking advantage of worse talent that won't translate to the next level. Because if you look at the skills he has, you know, he was all Pac-12 defense this year. He's a ridiculous shot blocker that was in the top 10 in Pac-12 in block rate. His instincts are off the charts. He's a really ridiculously good passer. Like I said, can score at all three levels. He's in the top 10 percentile of all players in college basketball this season at finishing around the rim. He has a good like mid-range floater game. He has a good pull-up off the dribble game. He can, like I said, knock down shots from three, both off the catch and off of the bounce. There's just so much to like about him in terms of his skill set in the modern NBA. And, you know, I said that he was all Pac-12 defense. I think there's a little bit of concern that that's not necessarily going to translate in an exceedingly high level. He's not like the quickest dude in the world. He doesn't have like this crazy ass frame, but I do think that he is the closest thing in this draft to Malcolm Brogdon last year, right? Like, you know, Malcolm, I think, went underrated in terms of frame, in terms of just being a physical freak, right? Like Malcolm Brogdon is 6 foot six with a 6'11 wingspan, 230 pounds, the biggest hands you'll ever see, just jacked in terms of frame, right? Derek White's not necessarily that. He's a pretty skinny kid that just has similarly incredible instincts. But if Malcolm Brogdon was in this draft, he probably goes number 13 or so, maybe number 12. So Derek White's a slightly worse prospect, I think, than Brogdon was, but he is still a similar level player that can help you with positional size at both the one and two and can be a highly skilled player for you going forward.
Speaking of guys who kind of rose up, late bloomers, I mean, Semi Ojeleye is a guy who I am very intrigued with. And I kind of think that he's – I don't know where you stand on this, but I kind of think he's the ideal Thunder pick just because
– I agree.
I mean, I don't know – if he's going to guard threes unbelievably well, that's kind of my concern. Is he a four? Is he a three? He's certainly a tweener. I mean, I think the definition of tweener, or at least the way that we used tweener in 2017, is very different than the way we did 10 years ago. You know, Draymond Green was a tweener at the same time. It's not like tweeners don't exist just because versatility is so much more, you know, well used. Like Derek Williams is still a tweener. Like tweener can still be a bad thing.
Well, here's the way I explain tweener. You are a tweener if you can't guard anyone because you don't have lateral quickness. You are versatile if you can guard multiple positions because you do have lateral quickness and you do have a defensive mentality, right?
I kind of think Ojeleye is more on that better side. Like I could see right. him guarding threes, guarding fours. Like I see Jay Crowder in him. I know they had different collegiate styles, but what Jay Crowder turned into the league, I see a lot of that in him, and he shot really well from three this year. He seems to have a pretty solid release. He looks like he's going to be able to guard multiple positions. He's pretty long. He's extremely big in the chest. Like, I don't think he's going to be that easy for if you want to play like a switchy defense with him. I don't think it's going to be that easy for a bigger play. You want to play him at the four? Like, I don't think it's going to be that easy for a big guy or a conventional big guy or a guy with a post game or anything like that to take advantage of, you know, a so-called mismatch and be able to back him down. Like he played a lot of four this year. He seems to be perfectly comfortable there. Like I'm into it. I think he's going to be able to space the floor, spot up, shoot. He looks like he really, and he's a great athlete. I mean, he looks like he genuinely understands how to play the game. I think he's going to be good. I really do.
Yeah, I have him as a top 20 prospect in this draft, just like I have Derek White as a top 20 prospect in this draft. Have you gotten a chance to like stand next to him yet? Like, I don't know if like you've gone to like some Thunder, like, you know, draft workouts or anything.
No,
like,
they don't. The Thunder are about as secretive with their draft workouts as any team in the league. So they don't. Some teams. So to put it in perspective, because obviously your average fan does not know this, because why in the hell would they?
Sure.
Some teams, like for example, Utah or Philadelphia, they will not only announce who they're working out and when they're working them out, but they'll do media availability with those players after. And a lot of times, you actually get to watch those players do their whole workout, or at least part of their workout. The Thunder don't announce who they're working out, won't confirm who they're working out. You can say, I spoke to this player, and he told me he worked out for you, and what he did, and who was there, and they'll be like, I don't know what you're talking about. So they just will not. They are as secretive as they possibly can be, and they're not the only organization like that.
Sure.
I think the Knicks are like that. The Spurs are certainly like that. It does not correlate with how good or bad of an organization you are, as you can tell by the two teams that I gave as examples after the Thunder. But I have not stood next to him. I have not met him, but I mean, he seems pretty, like, I mean, he's broad dude.
He is the largest, like, most jacked human that has, like, entered the NBA draft that I can remember. Like, I thought, like, Justin Anderson was pretty big and, like, pretty muscular and, like, looked like he would just, like, crush you. Semi Ojeleye, like, there is no comparison. Like, this dude could genuinely wreck, like, any person. Like, I would take him in a fight. He doesn't really have that, like, kind of mentality. Like, he's actually, like, the, like, nicest guy, you know, really hard worker, really takes, like, basketball seriously. Very religious, you know, awesome, awesome kid. But like, if he wanted to wreck you, like he it would be over. Like his like biceps are as big as my head, and I have a huge head. Like it is unbelievable. In terms of his game though, you kind of hit on a lot of it, right? Like I do believe that he is more of a versatile player than a tweener. And the reason that I say that is that, you know, anything that you look at in terms of the tape or his athletic testing, he actually does move his feet incredibly well. He was one of the quickest guys in terms of lane agility at the combine. Really good vertical leap, obviously. He has like that, you know, quick twitch, like acceleration, that gets you going super quick despite being that big. Shooting ability, like you mentioned, really, really high level shooter, can knock it down on the move, can knock it down, in spot up situations, can attack closeouts and take a couple dribbles and pull up from the mid range. Really a lot of utility on the jump shot is kind of the way that I put it. He's exactly what I think the Thunder need too, outside of like backup.
He'll be
guard,
good in
right?
Like he is, he'd be good in transition for them too.
He would, yeah. He'd be really good in transition. He's an awesome 2-foot leaper. Not necessarily a great finisher around the rim if he can only like jump off of 1 foot and is a little bit crowded. But he is a really, really good 2-foot leaper up in transition. You're definitely right there. I've heard some concerns that like people aren't sure if he's going to be able to guard threes. People aren't sure if he's going to be able to, do all of the things that you need to in terms of switches. I'm not real worried about that, to be honest. I think he's going to be able to do it at a high level. And the reason that I say that is I think that whoever gets him as an NBA team, I would imagine that their training staff is going to kind of go to work on maybe, I don't want to say like improving his body because like I said, like he's already like jacked and already like in basically impeccable physical condition. But I think that there's room for growth in terms of his like aerobic, what exactly am I looking for here in terms of the words like aerobic,
the type of shape you're talking about, the style of shape. Yeah. You're talking about the style of shape that he's in, not the quality of shape that he's in.
Right. Exactly. Like I think a team like we'll probably start to work with him on flexibility, work with him on aerobics. Honestly, might try and like slim him down just a touch. One of the, it was funny. One of the complaints I heard from a NBA executive at the combine was he literally can't like reach his arms above his head. Like he only had like an 8'6" standing reach. And they were like, yeah, he can't reach his arms all the way above his head to like, you know, hit the bar that you're looking for on the standing reach test. And I was like, yeah, that really makes sense. Like I would imagine that like a team will probably just try and work with him to, you know, make his arms more flexible, make him more capable of contesting shots, make him, you know, do some of the little things that, you know, maybe that bulky frame doesn't allow you to do, but he's always going to be a big barrel chested dude that's going to be strong as hell. Like, you know, I love dudes like that. I love guys that really work their ass off defensively and can shoot. I'm a huge fan of Ojale, and in terms of how he would fit the Thunder, I think it's perfect. He would be able to, you know, morph right in next to any of their big guys. He would be able to maybe play some three and really be like kind of a terror lineup with Andre Roberson. I'm a really, really big fan of Semi Ojeleye.
If he can shoot and he can do something offensively, I mean, lineups with – you could get so creative defensively with personnel like Oladipo, and if Roberson comes back, but Oladipo – and Roberson and Ojeleye and Jeremy Grant and Steven Adams. And obviously I don't think you're going to play, you know, maybe, you know, every once in a while you throw that lineup out there, but that just gives you so much different personnel to play with. You can splice in different kinds of guys with, you know, three or four of those out of those five guys. And you can get really creative defensively and have some really versatile defensive lineups, whether it's Ojeleye, you know, you can play an Ojeleye Grant, you know, front court, which would be interesting because they have a lot of similarities in a lot of ways. And Roberson's so versatile. Yep. And Oladipo, I think, had a really good defensive year this past season. And I think he's gotten better every year defensively, becoming far more disciplined. And I think he's probably going to be a better defender because he's progressed mentally every single year. And I don't see why that wouldn't stop now. So I think he's going to be a better defender next year and could become a really good defender. So I think they have a lot of defensive possibilities if they take him. Rank these wings for me. For the Thunder specifically, rank these wings for me. Ojeleye, we just talked about. OG Anunoby and Justin Jackson. A couple of those guys, it's very possible, might be gone. Maybe all three are gone by the time the Thunder pick. But let's assume for some reason they all slip and the Thunder have their pick at 21 and they're choosing between those three. What's your draft board look like for them?
I will say that I would be pretty surprised if Justin Jackson's there. I think it would probably, man, that's tough. Cause for them, I actually do really like the positional versatility that Ojeleye would provide, even though I have Justin Jackson slightly higher on my board. I would probably go Jackson, Ojeleye, Anunoby, which I feel like is like sacrilege for the internet, given the fact that like OG Anunoby is like everyone's favorite, like darling prospect now.
Draft Express has Anunoby at the time of us recording this, which is Sunday afternoon. Draft Express has Anunoby going to the Thunder.
I think it's a really interesting fit. He really fits their mold in terms of what they look for in prospects. 6'8", you know, just a behemoth of a human. Like, if you were building a basketball player for the modern NBA in a lab, you would basically build OG Anunoby. 7'3" wingspan, 5.5% body fat, you know, huge hands, like everything that you're looking for in terms of frame, he has it. That translates best on the defensive end and with his athleticism. You know, he definitely has potential to be the best defensive player in the draft. I don't think there's any doubt about that. My problems with him, obviously, are first and foremost, he's going to have some medical concerns, given the fact that he tore his ACL earlier this year. Second, I will say that he is probably the furthest away offensively of any prospect in this draft that's going to go like in the first round, right? Like, he hasn't really displayed any sort of like high level discernible like NBA offensive skill yet. And that's a little bit scary. Like his jump shot has a super low release point and it's not quite as fluid as it needs to be. Doesn't really have any sort of game attacking closeouts. He's fine at cutting off ball, but like everyone in the NBA that's that big and that athletic can cut off ball. Like he has less offensive skill entering the NBA than what Jeremy Grant did from Syracuse. And that's, it's taken Grant quite a while to be able to get to the point where he can be a rotation player on a playoff team. You know, Anunoby probably has a little bit higher of a ceiling than Grant, obviously, just given the physical traits that he has. And like I said, absolutely fits Sam Presti's MO in terms of athletic dude, great physical frame, and a really good kid that you don't really have to worry about off the floor. He's very quiet, but you know, I've not heard a bad word about him in terms of background or anything like that yet. So that really fits what Oklahoma City likes, and I think that he's absolutely a potential pick for them. I would take Derek White over him. I would take Ojale over him. I would take, yeah, Justin Jackson over him. Like, he's just that far away offensively for me.
So we're kind of in the same camp on him, because I could see him being really good. It's perfectly conceivable. There are two concerns I have with him, which I think are very legitimate. Number one, he still doesn't shoot threes. And I don't know if he's a guy who's not going to shoot threes. His fit is going to be weird, especially on a team where the Thunder have an extremely ball-dominant guy, and he's really not going to be able to take over that role unless he just becomes an absolute superstar, right? Which is extremely unlikely. So the fit could just end up being weird. And I realize at 21, if you think a guy's going to be really good, forget about the fit, just get him. And if he ends up being really good and the fit is weird, worst case scenario, you draft a really good guy at 21 and you can probably get a ton for him in value because he's on a cheap rookie deal. Like look at all the Thunder got for Cameron Payne, and he didn't even show anything in the NBA just because he was on, you know, his cheap rookie deal and there was a team that still believed in him. So I still, though, think that a guy who shot 31% from three on and has a slow release and might not be able to get up contested shots at all for a while unless he redoes his shooting form or something like that, like, that's concerning to me. We didn't mention the injury either. I mean, that's a big deal. Like, he's not going to be able to play for a little while, and that's a problem with the knee injury and the knee surgery, and who knows? I mean, look, if a doctor comes and says he's going to recover 100% and he'll be fine, That's one thing, but I don't. That's concerning, right? He's coming off a major injury and probably won't even be ready at the start of the year.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. The injury is concerning. It was very secretive early on, just exactly what had happened to him. He said at the combine, I believe it was a torn left ACL. I might be wrong on the leg, but I believe it's his left leg. Whenever you're talking about a guy who is so dependent on his athleticism to become an NBA player, it's really scary to me that, like, he's, you know, so much of his future is tied to that leg getting fully healthy and getting fully back. I would imagine that he had the best doctors in the world take care of his, everything, take care of his, you know, surgery and have taken care of his rehab and stuff. But I'm not quite in on the OG Anunoby experience. I'm just not quite there.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. You think Justin Jackson projects to be gone from what I hear, he's probably going in the late teens, the latest, which is before the Thunder pick at 21. He's really smart. And I had a chance to talk with him for a little while on the phone this week.
Yep.
It comes across when you talk to him too, right? He's a bright kid, and he clearly improved a lot. I remember watching him when he first got to UNC, and he just couldn't shoot a lick. He was an extremely different offensive player. Now all of a sudden he upped his volume. He took three threes a game as a sophomore and upped it to over seven a game as a junior on a really, 38% last year.
And a lot of those were tough shots too.
Right.
Like, he's a very real shooter.
Yes. But the way that they design their offense, he's not shooting with his toe on the 3-point line. Like, he is shooting from NBA range often in those games because of the way that they just, UNC basically has their guys stand far behind the 3-point line and as a spacing tactic, I guess. And it works with Jackson because he shot really well this year and he was excellent. He's a really smart defender. Like, he's a really good team defender. I feel like he's going to be – rookies are never good defenders. Like, almost never are rookies all-around defenders. Like, maybe you'll have rookies who try really hard and rookies who become really good defenders because everyone was a rookie once. And rookies who defend really well on the ball maybe because they try hard and they have the physical abilities and they you can tell they know what they're going to do. But it is so rare that a rookie is going to be a really good team defender. That usually comes in year two or later, or maybe the end of that rookie year at best. But when a guy just steps in as a rookie, almost never is that guy a good defender. If I were going to pick one, you know, guy outside of the top five or something like that from this year who I think is going to be able to step in and be like, That guy is going to come in and at the very least be an average NBA defender on day one. Who the most likely candidate would be, I would pick Justin Jackson. How do you feel about that?
Oh, man. Oh, wow. That's a tough one.
Do you disagree? Well, do you disagree with at least my
No, he's a really smart defender. I totally agree. You know what he has that I think has gone really underrated about him? He has excellent footwork. His footwork is unbelievable. He just knows how to get leverage when fighting through screens. He has very quick feet in general in terms of setting his feet off of screens whenever he's going up for a shot. And he has very quick feet, sliding his feet with lateral quickness to cut off penetration defensively. There's a lot to really like about Justin Jackson's ability on defense. I have him at number 13 right now to Denver, and I really like that fit too. There's so many uses for 6'8" big men, right? Or 6'8" wings right now, right? Like, he has awesome positional size, knocks down shots from NBA three-point range, and is an exceedingly smart defender, and he's also a really underrated passer, and he has a really underrated mid-range game now. I feel like people have like kind of forgotten that he was like a mid-range killer for his first 2 years, and that's where he made all of his hay. He still has that game, but now he can just also shoot threes, and defenses have to close out on him, and he's going to be able to attack closeouts and hit those little floaters like it's nothing, you know. I really like his game as an excellent role player at the next level. Not an explosive athlete, but whenever you're that good of a decision maker and that good of a passer, there's just such a high floor for you to fall back on.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So we had to break. Normally I do these podcasts over Skype. We're changing a little bit. I'm on Skype. Sam is now on his cell phone. And where are you, Sam?
I am in the middle of a Ralph's parking lot. For people who are unfamiliar with Ralph's, it is essentially your garden variety grocery store out here in Los Angeles. I am, right on, what is this, Sunset and, I believe, Poinsettia. It's a beautiful locale I'm staring at. I'm looking at a donut shop. I got a T-Mobile store. I got a Pinkberry across the street. A Petco. Maybe I'll go into the Petco for my charming dog, Penny. It is a lovely, lovely time here in L.A.
This is dedication, Sam. This is true. You're not even part of the show. This is true dedication to the show. This is amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was one of the first guests, I believe, on the Locked On Thunder podcast. And it's always been a... one of my favorites of the Locked On Network, so I'm happy to help out.
What a guy. All right, so I think we were talking about Justin Jackson when we took that break. Someone else, I want to talk about another ACC guy. He's a little bit off the Thunder's radar. He's a little bit off, I should say, the public's radar when it comes to the Thunder picking. But I think he's somebody that the Thunder are interested in, and that's Frank Jackson from Duke. Now, I don't know if that means that they're interested in him at 21 specifically, or if they happen to trade down or fall back or even trade out of the first round. Maybe they scoop him up in super early in the 30s or something like that, or even if they trade down to the late 20s and they take him there. But I do know that's somebody that they like a lot. And I'm wondering what your take on Jackson is, because he just underwent a minor foot surgery, nothing serious. He's meeting with teams. He's not working out for them. But it's hard for teams to get a full look at him just because of the surgery. And I'm wondering what your take is on him after he just finished his freshman season at Duke.
Yeah, I was not necessarily the biggest fan of Jackson this year at Duke. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of his NBA prospects. I currently have him as a pick in the 40 range. I believe he will go a little bit higher than that. You talk to some people around the NBA, there are some differing thoughts in terms of the severity of what his medical report looks like. So that exists. I'm sure that teams will have to get comfortable with the foot surgery that he has undergone. In terms of his abilities, you know, he tests as this incredible athlete, right? So among players that are still in the NBA draft, so if you take out Amadou Diallo, who decided to return to Kentucky, Frank Jackson tested as the best athlete at the combine. But he doesn't really show that on the floor, and I'll tell you kind of why that is. He's a power athlete that leaps off of 2 feet to get any sort of momentum or to, you know, get any sort of bounce to his game. That means that he struggles to finish around the rim whenever he has to jump off of 1 foot. And, you know, that power athleticism, it also kind of goes into his first step, right? He's not necessarily the quickest guy. He's not necessarily the guy that has the most shake to his game. And whenever you're essentially a point guard or a combo scoring guard, I think it's relatively difficult to make a living in the NBA without a whole lot of shake. He's a good shooter, certainly. But again, it's 6'3" with right around, I believe, a 6'7" wingspan. You know, those are point guard measurements, and he doesn't really portray or showcase a lot of point guard skills. So I have him in the 40s right now. I think as long as a team gets comfortable with his medical report, he'll probably go a little bit higher than that. But, you know, he's a tricky one to judge, I think.
Yeah, what I think is so interesting about him, like you mentioned how well he's tested as an athlete. I mean, he is, and the Thunder love the athletic numbers, right? Like they love those guys who test crazy well in combines, right? Like the Jeremy Grants of the world, those sorts of guys, the Houstises, those sorts of guys who test off the charts as these incredible athletes. They love buying on those guys. So I kind of think this is a typical thing for them if they were to pull back a little bit and then ending up drafting Jackson at some point or somehow acquiring him. It's really interesting to me with these guys who test unbelievably well in non-basketball settings athletically and then don't really show it on the court. Because sometimes those guys, if they're really young, if they're juniors, seniors, it's usually something different. But if they're 19 years old still, even 20 years old, sometimes you see that athleticism come out in their game later in their careers. You know, like Harrison Barnes is a guy who always tested really, really well. I'm not saying that Jackson is like Harrison Barnes. I'm really just thinking of a guy who tested really well athletically, and you never really saw it on the court that often, right? Harrison Barnes is a guy who always tested as a tremendous athlete in those sorts of settings, and you never really saw it on the floor, and you started to see it more this year at the Mavericks, and obviously part of that was with how Golden State used him. But that was a criticism of him, even when he was at North Carolina, that he had all this athletic ability and he just didn't necessarily bring it to the top of his game like he could have, even in situations when he could have been a ball-dominant guy. And I don't know how you judge. I don't know how scouts judge. This is why I'm not a scout. This is why sometimes scouting can just amaze me. How you can choose, all right, this is a guy who's going to be able to get it one day, and this is a guy who just isn't. And it's amazing to me how some people can differentiate those sorts of players.
Yeah, it's obviously an incredibly difficult and subjective, idea, right, to try and figure out what guys at 19 years old are going to, you know, eventually figure out how to apply their athleticism to a basketball game. That's not the easiest thing in the world to do, right? So with Jackson, what I look at that scares me a little bit is the fact that I think he has relatively stiff hips, like I said, and this is a thing that Barnes kind of had as well. He has stiff hips that I think kind of make him struggle a little bit to, you know, create that shake and create that sort of lateral separation that a lot of the best, like, combo scoring guards are capable of doing. Now, again, you kind of mentioned he's 19 years old. He's also known as an incredibly hard worker, and he's also known as a really, really good kid. These are all attributes, obviously, that the Thunder value, and every team around the NBA also values. But the Thunder, particularly, it does seem, under Sam Presti, have put a premium on those types of players. So I think there's a lot to like about Jackson. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of taking a combo guard project, I guess. Like, I don't, that doesn't like necessarily defend all that well and doesn't necessarily like, you know, contribute to the game in ways beyond scoring. I think it's kind of tricky for me to see the value in that.
So let's move on to another guard then before we hit up some of the bigs. Juwan Evans is a guy in-state, scored a lot for Oklahoma State, dribbled a lot for Oklahoma State, dribbles so much, man. Oh, my gosh. He dribbles, like, so much. He's a pretty good
player. Well, they don't have anyone else to dribble.
No, it didn't seem like they did. But he dribbles a lot. Pretty good pick-and-roll point guard, pretty good pick-and-roll tendencies. has some moves where you look at him and you're like, man, that's like a fundamentally an NBA move. Like he has a lot of moves in the pick and roll, some pocket passes, some floaters. Does that Chris Paul thing where he sticks his butt out and keeps his defender coming from behind him and keeps him away and uses that to find a floater or find the big man rolling or even find a baseline cutter or something like that. He's got a refined game in a lot of ways, but he's super ball dominant. He's a good scorer. He's prone to blow up. What do you think, Evans?
Juan Evans is probably as compared to consensus for everyone else, I would imagine he's probably my favorite player in the draft.
Give me some on that then.
Everything that he does translates to the NBA outside of his height. He is 5'11 with a 6'6 wingspan. He's a very pesky defender at the very least, even though he's certainly going to have some issues. Offensively, he was the only NBA prospect really on Oklahoma State. I mean, you can say what you will about Jeffrey Carroll, to be fair, you know, 6'7 kid who can shoot the ball, but I don't really believe that Carroll's going to play in the NBA. And, you know, Evans led the number one offense in all of college basketball, despite being the only true NBA player on that roster. Part of that is obviously Brad Underwood is an incredible offensive genius who deserves all of our recognition, even though he doesn't really get enough of it. The other part of it, though, is that he's just such an incredible decision maker, such an incredible pick and roll player that the biggest skills that I look for from point guards in translating to the NBA now are the ability to get separation and the ability to score off of the dribble. Passing is obviously extremely important, but those are the two things that if you can do that, you have a place in the NBA. Evans has an incredibly tight handle. As you mentioned, his footwork in the pick and roll is absolutely sublime. He is, understands exactly how to go around a screen, exactly how to, you know, use his screener's body. Exactly
how to use his
body. It's
the best of any point guard prospect. Like that specific trait is as good as any other point guard in this draft. He's just so defined in that sense.
He really is, you know. He understands exactly how to, like you mentioned, like use his ass to, you know, get guys on his hip, get guys on his back, use his body to shield defenders. It's really, really impressive. And whenever you can get that kind of separation from defenders, you're just, you know, you're halfway to where you need to be. You throw in the fact that, you know, he's right around a 40% three-point shooter at Oklahoma State. He has a really, really solid floater game. Has a really, really solid, passing game in terms of, head man passes up whenever his guys have beaten the defense already down the floor. Has those little wraparound passes that you look for in dump offs to big men. Has kick out passes to 3-point shooters. He has it all to me. Like I look at Juwan Evans, I have him at 14 on my board. Like I think he's like an end of the lottery pick. And talking to NBA executives around the league. Like, I do occasionally, and, now more than ever, I would say it's more than occasionally this time of year. There's a question whether or not he'll go in the first round, and, I understand it from a size perspective. I think that a lot of people are a little bit wary about the effects that a player like Evans can have on your defense, but I don't care, man. That guy is instant offense. That guy is going to help you score buckets. And if he is your backup point guard, there's kind of a dearth of backup point guards in the NBA right now. The 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016 drafts, they haven't exactly like brought out the best talent at the point guard position, right? Like really only Dennis Schroeder and like kind of D'Angelo Russell have really established themselves as starting caliber point guards in today's NBA. Russell obviously has shown somehow like to be a little bit better at a shooting guard role, maybe next to a point guard. You can certainly make an argument that Marcus Smart has developed into a starting caliber player, although he's maybe not best off as a point guard. Alfred Payton hasn't really made that leap yet. Emmanuel Mudiay obviously has struggled. There are a lot of guys from the 2013 to 2016 drafts that really haven't panned out. If you can get Evans, who is this polished, this skilled at getting separation and running a team. I think that that guy is easily worth a mid to end of the first round pick.
I think it's really interesting because I actually agree with you. I think he's better than where his conventional wisdom says he's going to be drafted. I think he's going to be a good player. He's a weird fit with the Thunder because I just don't see how he can play off the ball next to Russell Westbrook. So are you going to use a first round pick on a guy who you're predetermined?
Sure.
Okay, he's playing 13 minutes and that's it. I mean, you risk stunting his development. You risk, and even if he ends up being really good and he develops fine, you risk just drafting a guy who's only going to play 13 minutes, and then you have to kind of do what you do with Cameron Payne and trade him after a couple of years before his value plummets because he's not getting playing time in his third, fourth, whatever it is year. It's a weird fit.
Here's where I would push back on that a little bit. I
sure,
mean,
push.
First, Juwan Evans is just a better prospect than Cameron Payne.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. I wasn't comparing them. I was merely comparing the situations. I was just like, saying even if he's good, you're agreeing with me that he's not going to play next to Russell Westbrook for the most part, then you're capping his minutes at 13 to 15 minutes, and that's a problem because Russ is not, even if you think that Russ is capable of guarding twos, that's not going to be the situation.
Well, I'm going to get there in a second. Comparing Juwan Evans to Cameron Payne, the reason I like Evans more, much better passer, much more stout body, right? He's just going to be able to absorb contact. He's going to be able to deal with the physical rigors of the NBA in a lot stronger of a manner than Cameron Payne ever did or ever has and ever will, in my opinion. In terms of taking a backup point guard that can only play point guard, I know that Thunder fans aren't really going to want to hear this, but, like, on some level, if the best player available at 21 is a point guard, I'm not afraid to take a point guard here. And the reason for that is that you don't necessarily know what the future is holding for Russell Westbrook. Like, if he does not agree to the designated veteran player extension this summer, you kind of really need to explore trading him this summer or else you risk losing him for nothing like they did Kevin Durant. And that's a situation that could set that franchise back or set the Oklahoma City Thunder back, you know, years upon years at this stage, given the fact that their team is really capped out with guys like Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, and Victor Oladipo, who I don't really think anyone considers as even like a second banana on a legitimate playoff team, right? So, like, I understand that, and I understand that it's not a great topic to broach, but I'm not afraid to necessarily draft a point guard if I think that is the best player, just because I don't know what the future holds at this stage.
I think that's totally fair. I think that's a good point, and I'm glad you made it.
I don't want to make you make it, because otherwise you'll feel
I've made the point on Russell Westbrook, whether he extends or not this summer, being by far the most important Thunder storyline of the offseason about 12 times. I'm glad that somebody else had the opportunity to make it now.
It's not just the most important Thunder storyline. It is the most important NBA storyline of the summer, in my opinion.
Paul George may beg to differ.
I mean, does anyone think that Russell Westbrook or that Paul George holds a candle to Russell Westbrook as a player? Like, if Russell Westbrook ends up being on the market, like, this is a totally different ballgame because, as he showed this year, he is genuinely the type of talent that can take a team to the playoffs, not by himself, but with, you know, I would say teammates that don't necessarily fit around him in a totally cohesive manner. And that really can't be overstated. He is an unbelievable talent that, you know, Paul George is never going to be the best player on a title team. I genuinely believe Russell Westbrook, in the right situation, could be the best player on a title team.
So let's move on to the guy I'm most excited about. You know why I'm most excited about TJ Leaf?
I do not know why. Is he Jewish?
And there you go.
That one?
We're getting a Jewish player. This is great. It's awesome. Omri Caspi's been the only one for a long time. Unless you count Amari. But Caspi's been the only one for a long time. Jordan Farmar is half Jewish, but yeah, wasn't raised Jewish, I don't think. TJ Leaf. He's a real Jew. That's exciting.
That's very exciting for the Cats household.
It is. It is. We don't get a lot of Jewish NBA players. I mean, he's Israeli, right? He's an Israeli Jew. I think he's Israeli Jew.
He plays for the Israel national team.
Yeah, you get Jewish. I think his parents are Israeli. I think is what it is. But you get Jewish baseball players. Every once in a while, there's even like a Jewish NFL player. It's so rare you see a Jewish basketball player. This is exciting stuff. I'm excited for this. And you know what? I think he's pretty good. He's pretty skilled. He's a pretty skilled big man. He can shoot. He can fill the lane. Like I think he's pretty complete for a freshman big man coming out of UCLA.
I will mention that he is about sophomore. He's like in that gray area between like being freshman and being sophomore age. He's already 20 years old. I wouldn't necessarily like go super crazy in terms of saying like, you know, the basketball IQ that he portrays is,
he's already incredible. The second best Jewish basketball player in the world. And he's
That's
only
probably
20.
True. Who was the other one? Was there like Yotam Halperin? Was he Jewish?
Caspi's Jewish. I can't really think of any others.
I thought that Yotam Halperin, something like that, was drafted, and he was Israeli. I can't tell you what the development cycle and the development curve of Yotam Halperin has been, but you know, I would imagine that TJ Leaf has probably come pretty close to exceeding him at this stage.
Well, the exciting thing is that, like, although Leaf, I guess, I think he's Israeli, but like, Israelis tend to be, I mean, Israel produces some really good athletes in general.
What I will say is that TJ Leaf was born in Southern California and raised in Southern California.
Yes.
And plays for the Israel national team.
Yes. No, but his parents are Israeli. I'm pretty certain of that.
Are they?
Either way, he's American born. And it is cool that there is going to be an American born Jewish person playing in the NBA. Like, there are not a lot of like Woody Allen Jews who are capable of playing in the NBA. That's not a thing. Let's talk about actual basketball. Give me your TJ Leaf take and tell me why I'm wrong. Why he's not going to be as great as I say.
So TJ Leaf, really good kid, you know, super, super high IQ, both on and off the floor, you know, great decision maker, great passer, good shooter. I worry a little bit about the jump shot translating. He has a slow release. He has like kind of a funky thing where he brings the ball a little bit too far to the left in front of his face that I think is a little bit scary for the way the jump shot is going to translate. But whenever you're a good decision maker, you're a highly skilled player. He was one of the most efficient post players in all of college basketball this season. You know, variety of moves in terms of drop steps. He has like a little Dirk step back jumper that he can bust out. There's a lot of skill there that Leaf brings to the table. What concerns me is that he was probably the worst defensive first round pick this year in college basketball. Really doesn't like have a position. He's not quick enough to guard fours, really, even at the college level. Was okay like at the five defensively at the college level, but at 6'10" with like a 7-foot wingspan, you know, not a ton of like crazy vertical burst, not a ton of crazy lateral quickness, an underrated athlete, but not necessarily like the level of athlete you need to be an effective rim protecting center in the NBA. I think he's really, really going to struggle defensively. Having said that, though, there are guys that just figure it out, that are super, super smart and figure out how to be in the right position. Oklahoma City has a guy on their team, Doug McDermott, that you know, doesn't miss rotations, and oftentimes that's enough just to like get on the floor and stay on the floor, given how skilled he is offensively and as a jump shooter. Leaf, I think, is going to have to be in that boat more than be in the difference-making defensive player boat. You know, I like him. I have him as like a late first-round grade. I think he could go a little bit higher than that. I will say that I think the UCLA scheme this year and that Lonzo Ball probably made him a little bit of money. just because they put him in an excellent, excellent, excellent position to succeed. But having said that, this is a kid that, you know, I root the best for because he came into college with like this soft reputation and all this stuff. And in my opinion, has really exceeded all that you could have hoped for whenever he got to UCLA. He showed off toughness, showed off so much skill. He was a kid that people thought was like overrated as a five-star prospect, but he's not that. You know, he's going to be a first-round pick, and I think that, you know, if a team utilizes him correctly and insulates him correctly defensively, they're going to get a really interesting rotation player.
Okay, we're fact-checking here. This is according to Wikipedia, so it's obviously completely true. TJ Leaf was born in Tel Aviv while his father was playing professionally there, and he lived there for 2.5 years in Israel before moving to Lakeside, California in San Diego County. So he was born in Israel. There we go. We now know.
So you're taking it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, whatever. I don't care. I'll take anything. I took Amari Stoudemire because he like wore a yarmulke once, so I was pumped about that.
Yeah, he also bathed in blood, so I don't know if you want to take that.
Yeah, and he's said some very regrettable things ever since, but I already I already initiated him, so I'm not really sure what to do. Two big men I wanted to discuss also. Let's just discuss them together. The Thunder worked out both these guys, I know. A source told the Norman Transcript, original reporting. Tony Bradley, Justin Patton, both athletic. Bradley is long as hell. Either one in particular you think is a better fit if the Thunder were to go? Because what's interesting about the this is draft is that, let's say Jackson's gone, Ananobi's gone, both possible, if not likely, scenarios by the time the Thunder are pick at 21. And let's just say that Ogilvy is gone, too, for the sake of it. Let's say he gets scooped up in the late teens. Just not a lot of wings remaining. I mean, they could you know, technically reach on White because the consensus is that White is kind of the late mid to late 20s, which is not really that much. I mean, that's a perfectly fine pick. But just in that range, you got Bradley and you got Leaf and you got Patton and you got Giles, and you have a ton of these big men, these conventional centers and power forwards, and the Thunder have a ton of them. But if the Thunder want to go best remaining player, and it's very possible they could feel like it's one of these big men. And they worked out a couple of those guys. And I'm wondering, Patton, and Patton's from Creighton. Bradley's from UNC. Bradley didn't really get as much playing time. Seems to be a little more raw coming out of his freshman year there. But, man, he's long and athletic. And I'm wondering what you think of either of those two guys, if the Thunder in that position. Which one you value more, Giles too? Any of those guys stand out the most to you?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Tony Bradley guy. I don't really think he's all that athletic, to be honest. I think that he moves really slowly laterally. He's heavy-footed, doesn't have a ton of vertical burst. I think the length kind of makes him look a little bit more athletic than he is. I think he's really going to struggle defensively and really going to struggle with the speed of the game in the NBA. I have him like as a mid-40s level prospect, and I'm not convinced he goes in the first round, despite what I've been told is some pretty strong workouts. Justin Patton, I do think, goes in the first round. Interesting player. Was a guy that was kind of a late bloomer in high school, 7-foot-tall, 7-foot-3 wingspan. Interesting body in that, like, he kind of has these, like, wide hips and, like, I think that, again, like, his length can make him look a little bit more athletic and a little bit more bouncy and explosive than he is. But the difference between the two is that Patton actually has a lot of really interesting skills. He showed off the ability occasionally to step out and shoot the three. He can run the floor. He can, really pass the ball surprisingly well for a big man that is 19, 20 years old. So I like Justin Patton considerably more than I like Tony Bradley. With Patton, you know, you hear some things about, like, maturity and if he's ever going to get the most out of his talent from, like, NBA people. But, you know, if you're trying to take a shot on a guy who can be, like, a quote-unquote star, you can do worse than taking a chance on Justin Patton. But if I'm the Oklahoma City Thunder, I'm not looking big. I'm not looking anywhere near big. I am looking for wings. I will reach for a wing if I have to, or I will reach for a, like, you know, point guard, combo guard if I have to, because, you know, what use for a true big man do you have behind an Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, Domantas Sabonis, like guys like that? I don't really know.
Which guy the Thunder have bought second round picks in the past? They bought one last year when they drafted Daniel Hamilton. Is there anybody that is kind of firmly thought of as a second round pick that you think is being way undervalued by the masses? Who you think? I mean, we talked about Juwan Evans, who is a possible second round pick. I mean, he's a possible first round pick too. People kind of have him all over the place. But is there anybody else who you think is firmly thought of? This guy is considered second round pick or even undrafted that you think could be a really nice pick for any team out there if they falls to them or they were thinking about buying a pick. The Thunder don't have a second round pick right now, which I'm prefacing that with.
You know, I think it would be smart for them if either Frank Mason or Monte Morris falls, like into the mid 40s or late 40s. It would be smart for them to buy a pick and just go in and buy Monte Morris or Frank Mason, because both those guys could step in immediately and give them 13, 14 minutes a game as a backup point guard. And I think do it at an exceedingly high level. So if those guys are available, I would probably take them. I have both of them as like mid 30s prospects right now, not quite first round picks, but pretty darn close. In terms of some other guys, I'm trying to think like what guys like kind of scream the Thunder. Wes Iwundu from Kansas State, really good kid. 6'7" with a 7'1" wingspan, has some point guard abilities, can pass the ball a little bit. The key is the jump shot, right? And the Thunder have always been willing to take chances on guys that, have questionable jump shots. And, you know, if he's there like mid to late 40s, I can see them moving in to buy a pick for him.
What about like Reed from Miami? Because he seems a little Thundery to me too, just because of the wingspan. Like, he's so long. And Thunder love those twos, threes who are just super long.
They do, and Reed's a really interesting defender as well. Certainly a more polished defender than a guy like Wes Iwundu. It wouldn't be crazy to me to see Davon Reed get drafted at all. I think that's totally within the realm of possibility. Interesting player, like I said, can shoot the ball a little bit. Problem is that he's just really not an athlete in any sense of the word. Like, he barely gets off the ground.
Well, Sammy, you got. Tell me. Let's finish this up, and then I'll let you get out of the parking lot. Tell me. Big week for you, work wise, I assume. So tell me what you got coming out. Plug all of your work. Plug everything on Twitter. Plug your podcasts. Tell me everything.
Yeah. So it's Sporting News. I'm gonna have a bunch of player profiles coming out this weekend or in this week. I did a nice 2,000-word grade the trade on the Boston Celtics, Philadelphia 76ers trade that happened over the weekend involving the number one overall pick. Really interesting kind of dynamics there. Vice Sports, I'll probably have something later this week. I don't know what. At some point, I will have a 2018 NBA draft preview. I will have a top 100 for the 2017 draft. I will have a mock draft for the 2017 draft. At SethsDraftHouse.com, Seth Davis's new venture over at Medium. So, you know, just keep it locked there. I also have a podcast, the Game Theory Podcast. Fred has been on it, a couple times. I'm lucky enough to get to talk to him quite regularly on it. So I really appreciate his presence. It's that time of year, man. It's just crazy. So many things happening, and hopefully I can find some time to do everything that I want to do.
And plug your Twitter, too. What are you on Twitter again? I don't remember.
Sam_Vicini. Just find the person tweeting about hockey, because I strangely am a little bit more interested right now in the NHL expansion draft than the NBA draft. And I feel like the reason for that is just because I've been doing the NBA draft now for how many months in a row that I've run out of talking points, so I'm just fascinated by the NHL expansion draft.
And this is the point where you have to have the talking points.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, after months upon months, I have them locked and loaded.
Yeah, this is your moment, and we're moving to NHL. That's whatever. It's fine. How does the NHL expansion draft work?
So you can each NHL team can protect either seven forwards, three defensemen, and one goalie, or eight skaters and one goalie. So that means if you decide to protect like four defensemen or five defensemen, you can only protect four forwards or three forwards, right? That it creates like these really weird dynamics in terms of like list decisions, and then like each general manager is trying to negotiate with Vegas right now to like convince them to not take the player that like they had to, you know, leave exposed because of, you know, roster limits and everything. It's like the craziest format that I can remember. It's like the theory behind all of it is fascinating to me.
How does that work with contracts though? Isn't that like a really easy way for a team to get out of a bad contract?
Sure. But like, you have to assume that Vegas isn't going to take the bad contract. So like, so Ottawa has exposed Bobby Ryan, who has a $7 million contract, with them per year. And I think there's like 5 years left on it. And he had like 35 points this year. Obviously Vegas is not going to take Bobby Ryan. So the Penguins though have Marc-Andre Fleury, who like led them for half the playoffs this year, but is very clearly entrenched as their backup goalie. You know, Vegas is going to take him, and that $5.5 million cap hit is going to go off of the Penguins cap, meaning they're just going to be able to spend it on free agents. It's awesome.
Very interesting. All right. Well, yeah, that's the most hockey talk we've ever had on this podcast, but I'm into it. That actually is kind of cool. Must suck for the players.
It's like,
but that is kind of
fascinating.
Cool.
Yeah, it has to suck for the players because they don't really know what's going to happen. You know, you can only expose players that have 3 years of experience or more as well. Just the craziest, like craziest dynamics in a draft and in like a player selection process that I can remember.
Well, you can keep up with your drafts, and you can keep up with Sam everywhere. He just said you can remember I'm on. Now Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that's gonna keep going. That's not just this week. That's continual now. You can head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there, and check out, I should have said it at the top of the show, I didn't. Check out Locked On NBA's mock draft. There have now been, I guess this is going up Monday, so there are gonna be four parts of it so far, six picks a day. I think it's awesome. I think it's great. I did the Thunder pick for Monday's episode, pick number 21. There have been trades of picks. Each GM or each host is playing GM of a team, and it's really cool. And I think it was really fun to put together. We did a mock draft, we did trades, we did picks, we did everything. And David, who hosts Locked On NBA, if you don't listen to Locked On NBA, he's hosting it as if it's like a live studio show of the actual draft, and it's been really fun. We've got Mike Schmitz from Draft Express as kind of the Fran Fischilla meets Tom Penn meets whomever else is there. When they do the draft there, and he's kind of kicking to him for expert analysis, and then he also kicks to us as the GMs for our process and picking them and trading them and that kind of stuff. What are you going to say, Sam?
Mike is the Tom Crean of this draft process, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the vertical show, exactly. And
well, wait,
David is Maddox.
Wait. Hold on, Mike is the Mike Schmitz of the vertical draft show.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. There you go. But you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to NormanTranscript.com for early Thunder needs and draft coverage and all that other stuff. You can check out my blog, Thunder Road, like I said at the top of the show. Follow team coverage, draft coverage, everything else. What's next for the Thunder there? That's going to do it for today. I'm back Wednesday. Sam, thanks for coming on.
Yep, anytime, Fred.
Until Wednesday, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.